Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Let him tee off on Drake May two times a year, and I think he'll hit the sack total that'll put him in contention for Defensive Player of the Year.
Welcome into the NFL on Fox podcast. I am Dave Hellman. Welcome back. Welcome aboard. Thanks for tuning in. As per usual in this crazy league, we have got a lot to get to. It's been a busy few days since the last time we were in your feed. What else is new? Really fun show for you today. Fox Sports' own Henry McKenna, our AFC East reporter, stopping by the show. We're going to have him on anyway to make some predictions. We're going to talk about this 2024 rookie class, favorites, long shots to win the rookie awards. That's right. We're going to try to help you find the next great rookie star, the next CJ Stroud, and the next Puka Nacua. We're going to talk about who might be winning those postseason rookie awards at the end of the year. On top of that, just pure serendipity. It was a busy weekend in Henry's division, the AFC East up to some stuff, particularly the Miami Dolphins with a big move, signing Odell Beckham Jr. over the weekend. We're going to talk to Henry about all of that at the end of the show. I'll make sure to make some predictions that age really well with all 32 draft classes in place. I'm going to try to predict this year's playoff field. What else would you be doing in May than making way too early predictions? Isn't that the fun of it? Easy for you to say. You don't have to read the comments when I get these wrong. We'll see how that ages. Let's start at the top, though. Let's start with the latest news in the NFL. We'll get to Odell. We'll get to some other things in the AFC East when Henry hops on. So we're not ignoring that, but plenty of other topics to get to until then, particularly since the last time we talked to you, we did hit the NFL's fifth-year option deadline. Thursday, May 2nd was the deadline for NFL teams to pick up the fifth-year option on players that were drafted in 2021. After your third season, NFL teams can decide, do we pick up the fifth year and keep this guy under contract for an extra season at a much higher cost? Or do we say, thank you, but no thank you, you've been great, but when this fourth year of your contract is over, you can become a free agent? Typically, it's a sign of how good or bad the pick was if a team is willing to pick up the option or not. The vast majority of this was very straightforward. 20 teams said, yes, we will keep you on that fifth-year option, lock you in. 12 teams declined those options. If you're watching, you can see the whole list of 12. I would say the vast majority of this is common sense. Most of the guys that didn't see their options picked up just haven't seen their careers pan out. Two noteworthy ones at the top. I mean, Zach Wilson and Trey Lance, they are two quarterbacks drafted in the top five. Not particularly surprising when you consider they've both been traded to new teams. You can say the same thing about Justin Fields. Trey Lance now with the Cowboys, Justin Fields now with the Steelers, Zach Wilson now with the Broncos. If a guy was bad enough or middling enough to get traded to a new team before his contract's up, I don't think the new team is going to pick up the option at quarterback, where the value of that position means you'd be paying the guy $23 million. That was always a long shot. Particularly interesting in the case of Trey Lance and the Cowboys, though. Trey Lance not getting his option picked up means he will be a free agent in 2025. That is interesting because Dak Prescott is currently scheduled to be a free agent in 2025. And oh, for good measure, longtime backup Cooper Rush also scheduled to be a free agent in 2025. So with Trey Lance not on the fifth-year option, all of the Cowboys quarterbacks could be free agents at the same time. That is awfully interesting. It'll be something to watch as we wait to see if Dak Prescott gets an extension. One more notable, and that would be Pittsburgh Steelers running back Najee Harris officially did not get his option picked up. eyebrow raising mainly because of the production. I mean, Najee Harris has had three straight 1,000-yard seasons, 1,200 yards as a rookie, 1,000 yards the last 2 years. Him and Jaylen Warren have been a very dynamic backfield duo the last couple years. Just continues the debate about running back salaries. How much are running backs worth? Should running backs be paid? It seems like every time we get an answer in the positive, we get an answer equally in the negative. It only would have cost the Steelers $6.7 million in 2025 to keep Najee Harris employed. That's only the 12th highest salary. So you're not making the guy the highest paid running back in the league by keeping him. But the Steelers said, no. That's a lot of money to guarantee to a guy who, to be fair, has only averaged 3.9 yards per carry during his career. So I can see it both ways, but Steelers invested a lot of draft capital in their offensive line this year. Maybe he will have, you can't even call it a resurgent year because Najee Harris is a 1,000-yard rusher, but maybe he could be even better. Sets the stage for a very interesting prove-it year for Najee Harris, and the ongoing debate about whether running backs are valuable seemingly will never end. We'll see how it goes. Couple interesting free agent notes other than Odell. Like I said, we'll get to him. But speaking of LSU receivers, another former Tiger signed a deal over the weekend. DJ Chark is off to the Los Angeles Chargers. I don't think we have to mistake this with a landscape shifting move. It just does make a ton of sense for the Chargers. They traded Keenan Allen. They lost Mike Williams. They drafted Ladd McConkey as well as a couple of other day three type guys. But the Chargers needed an X receiver, and that's what DJ Chark represents. DJ Chark, a big, fast dude. What am I looking at here? 6'3", 200 pounds, runs very fast. I think most people would agree DJ Chark has been trying to capture the success of his 2019 season in Jacksonville for quite a while now. Injuries have been a big part of that. But the difference is Mike Williams signed in New York for a ton of money, and the Chargers get a similar type of player, not as good, don't get me wrong, but a similar type of player for just 1 year up to $5 million. So I think this is a move by the Chargers to acquire an X type of receiver, a big-bodied guy who can win one-on-one matchups. Maybe it's Quentin Johnston that steps up. I don't think anybody should close the book on the former first-round pick. It was just a year ago that he was drafted very highly, but you do the math. Ladd McConkey is there now. They bring in DJ Chark. They use two more draft picks in the seventh round on receiver. I think the Chargers are trying to create competition there. It was a previous regime that brought Quentin Johnston in, so the time to deliver is now. It'll be interesting to see how the snaps shake out. Maybe it is DJ Chark. Maybe Quentin Johnston delivers, but I think the Chargers trying to give themselves options in the first year of the Jim Harbaugh era. Speaking of Chargers receivers, Jalen Guyton used to play for the LA Chargers. He is off to the Las Vegas Raiders over the weekend. Again, I don't think anybody should mistake this for a landscape altering move. Jalen Guyton had a couple 500 yard seasons for the Chargers, used very sparingly over the last couple of years, but these are the types of signings that happen at this time of year. The Raiders did not draft anyone at wide receiver. They obviously have Devontae Adams, but they cut Hunter Renfro. Not a ton there behind Adams and Jacoby Myers on the Raiders depth chart. So take a flyer on a cheap guy that can run very fast, very far down the field. That's what Jalen Guyton is. You see what happens. I think we're going to continue to see signings like this throughout the league leading up to and even during training camp. As we also saw in the AFC East, the biggest one probably would be the Miami Dolphins edition of Odell Beckham Jr. Henry McKenna, as we teased, he stopped by the show, talked about why we think the Odell signing could still be a sneaky big move, even if Odell is a little bit past his prime, plus our conversation about rookie award winners. Really fun stuff. Check it out. All right, thrilled to be joined once again by our buddy, AFC East reporter for FoxSports.com. You can find his work there and at the Fox Sports app. The very busy Henry McKenna. Not just AFC East news, but personal life as well. How's it all going, my guy?
Yeah, I had a baby. My wife had a baby. Her name is June, and she is absolute dynamo. She cried for most of today. We're acclimating her to daycare. So it's going about as well as you'd think, which is not particularly well.
Hey, but it all pays off in the long run, right? Like, I mean, congratulations. We are thrilled to have you back, but we're so happy that you got to go take care of some business there dealing with June. But before June comes May, right? Let's talk about the storylines in May. The AFC East, surprisingly busy after the NFL draft, and it all happened over the weekend. We were going to have you on anyway, Henry, just to talk about the rookie of the year races and some of our takeaways from the draft. But then the Miami Dolphins over the weekend go out and they sign Odell Beckham. I think we can all agree that Odell is not the guy that we remember from his Giants or even his Browns days. But going to an offense like Miami's, where he can be a very functional third wide receiver, this is still pretty intriguing to me. Do you think I'm being too optimistic?
No, I love the match. I wrote about it this weekend or last weekend. I was thinking about, at first, gut reaction was, what are they going to do with all these receivers? And then eventually thought about how much motion that team uses and how, look at Tyreek Hill. At one point last year, he was running like 80 yards before the snap. Like even before he started running real routes, he was running 80 yards a game. And he was exhausted. So that led to him actually getting like 66-ish% of snaps. Still led the NFL in receiving yards, but you look at a guy like CeeDee Lamb, who was right behind him. CeeDee plays about 85% of snaps. Look at Amon-Ra, you know, third most receiving yards in the NFL. He also played about 85% of snaps. So the Dolphins don't use their receivers at the same rate as other teams. That's because of the pre-snap notion. That's because they get exhausted. What that all adds up to is you really need a good third wide receiver. And we saw the Dolphins played a lot of Cedric Wilson last year. They played a lot of Cedric Wilson was kind of top. Oh, and Robbie Chosen. Those two guys got a lot of snaps. It would be surprising probably for people to hear that because their stats were so insignificant. So they really need a guy in that role who's going to get the same number of snaps. I think it's like around 40%, but they can actually do something with those snaps. And that's where Odell comes in. I think that's why his signing is sort of like perfect. Like you said, maybe not the same guy as he was in New York. Doesn't need to be. They're going to use him at a limited role. They're going to maximize his production. I think he's going to be a really important cog in that offense right behind Tyreek and Jalen Waddle.
To your point, I don't know how many teams in the NFL have as funny of a split as the Miami Dolphins do when it comes to receptions and receiving yards. Like obviously Tyreek Hill, all pro, 1,800 yards, Jalen Waddle, 1,000 yards last year. And then after them, it dips all the way down. Their number three receiver, tight end Durham Smythe, 366 yards. Like the target share with this team is absurd in the sense that Tua Tagovailoa is basically targeting those two or nobody. So to have a third guy who can step in and maybe bridge that gap, not to mention filling in case of injury, I do think Odell can make a difference here in a way that maybe he doesn't make as big of an impact in a lot of other places.
Yeah. I mean, like his production wasn't incredible with the Ravens. Actually, I thought that I was going to look up the stats on how many passes the Dolphins had last season and see that they were in the top 10 or even the top five. I think they're actually like 14th in pass attempts. So it's not like all of a sudden Odell is in an offense that throws more than the Ravens or anything like that. But it is exactly what you said. In an offense that's been so centrally focused on its top two receivers, it's a huge opportunity for Mike McDaniel to make his passing offense more multiple, which is crazy to think that Mike McDaniels has yet another toy in this offense. The guy that his offense with sort of two options is incredibly multiple and hard to defend. So bring in Odell, a guy who's probably, I don't know, it might be crazy to say, but like one of the wide receiver threes in the league, maybe the best wide receiver three in the league, especially in this offense, you know, might be the most dangerous wide receiver three. It's just a really good match. And it's an offense that's going to get a lot out of this receiver, I think, in a way that we haven't seen before. I'm excited. I really think Mike McDaniel is going to do interesting things with Odell.
And even at his, you know, even as long as he's been in the league, Odell averaged 16 yards per reception in Baltimore last year. Not saying he's not Devon Achane or Tyreek Hill or Jalen Waddle in terms of like outright speed today. I think he's still plenty fast enough to make a difference in that offense. Let's keep it in the division. And also with the Dolphins, a former Dolphins receiver, see what I did there, signed with the Buffalo Bills also over the weekend. That would be Chase Claypool, agreed to a deal in Buffalo. Let's be very clear, Henry. We talked about this before the show. Like, this shouldn't be a signing that changes much of the math in the AFC East. I mean, Chase Claypool, I believe, finished with 26 receiving yards for the Miami Dolphins last year. But it does raise a larger question of, have the Bills done enough? Obviously, Keon Coleman is going to be the headline grabber, pick 33 overall, first pick on the second day of the draft. And it seems like the Bills are hoping for big steps forward from guys like Khalil Shakir, as well as Dalton Kincaid, the first round pick last year. My question to you is, with a signing like Chase Claypool, and also with a guy like Odell Beckham going off the board, do you think the Bills have done enough? Like, is this group of position players, along with a guy like Josh Allen, is it enough to think that they can get by without Stephon Diggs?
Yeah, good question. I mean, not even the Bills probably know the answer to that. And I think that the fact that the Chase Claypool and Odell signings happened, I think, like on the same weekend, same day kind of thing. Anytime those sorts of transactions are that closely linked, you wonder if maybe the team, you know, that didn't get Odell was interested in Odell. So maybe the Bills were kind of in on Odell, and then all of a sudden they were out and they went for Claypool just as a sort of a consolation prize. And man, there's not much of a consolation prize. I think Claypool, like you said, is not the splash they need at that perimeter spot. So, okay, looking at what they do have, you mentioned Dalton Kincaid is sort of this, like, they call him like a receiver tight end hybrid. They call I forget what they call their formation with two tight ends, but essentially they don't think him as much of a tight end as Dawson Knox. And then they've got Khalil Shakir slot, Keon Coleman, who I'm 90% sure they're projecting to be their starting X receiver. And then Curtis Samuel is their gadget tool guy. The way that I just described all those guys is like, they're very niche. Each of them are role players that can do specific things. The offense is going to have to now highlight every single one of their strengths. And that's on Joe Brady, who was the offensive coordinator appointed at about mid-season last year when they got rid of Ken Dorsey. Brady took over. So I think it's on Joe Brady to get the most out of these players who, nobody is Stephon Diggs, obviously. I mean, Stephon Diggs is one of the best receivers in the league, so it's hard to say, oh, nobody's Stephon Diggs. Obviously, that's true. But these guys are, like, very limited, I would say, in a way that there's nobody even close to as big of a threat on a weekly level for defenses to go against. So I think it simplifies things when teams are trying to stop them. And guess what that means? It just means even more is going on Josh Allen's shoulders. And so, you know, he and Joe Brady, they're going to have to do Joe Brady's going to have stellar game plans that bring the most out of these limited options. And then Josh Allen's going to kind of have to be Superman. And I think he's going to have to keep ascending, even if his stats look kind of similar to last year. That would be a sign of growth for him, that he's supporting this cast in a way that really hasn't been able to do, because he's had a guy like Stephon Diggs to elevate him.
I can't wait to see what the focal point of that offense is going to be. I mean, it's going to be Josh Allen, obviously, but he's going to have to get the ball to somebody. I can't wait to see who that somebody is. I mean, does the rookie step right in? Is this an offense that rotates around its tight ends? Because Dawson Knox is still there as well. It's just interesting to think the Bills offense, it's still going to run through Josh Allen, obviously, but I think it is going to take on a much different look than what we've been used to over the last 2 or 3 years. No offense to Chase Claypool. I'm not sure how much he's going to factor into that, but somebody is going to have to step up.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of steel tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now, save $30 on the American-made steel FS56 RCE trimmer. Real steel. The FS56 RCE is made in America of U.S. and global materials. Offer valid through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Let's move it to a team that didn't add anybody over the weekend, but I haven't seen you since the draft. And I definitely want to get your take on the New England Patriots because of how much we don't know and how much there is, there's nowhere to go but up when you pick 3 overall in the draft and you start over at quarterback. Let's start in the obvious place, because we were talking about this before we started recording. I've been saying throughout the offseason that it makes perfect sense if the New England Patriots want to lean on Jacoby Brissett in the short term. He's obviously a guy that's started a lot of games. He's started in New England before. If they don't want to throw Drake May into the fire, they don't have to. But you seem to think that that might not be the case. Do you think Drake May has a very legitimate shot to be a day one starter for the Pats?
I'd go so far as I'd be surprised if he wasn't the day one, well, week one starter. I think that you bring in a guy like Jacoby Brissett in free agency because you want a guy like Drake May to start over Jacoby Brissett. If they had wanted things to be more competitive in training camp, they would have signed, like, I don't know, Gardner Minshew or someone who I think like gives you a legitimate shot to start and win games. Jacoby Brissett is like Steady Eddie, and I think he does a good job of making sure that things don't go off the track, that things don't get cataclysmically bad. But I don't think that he really is going to be all that competitive in training camp. I think ultimately a guy like Drake May, his physical tools, when you put them into an NFL system, it just becomes hard to hold that guy out of the starting lineup. I saw it even with Mac Jones. Like, I watched that quarterback competition between Mac Jones and Cam Newton, and it played out, I think this one is going to play out, where you go in and you're like, they're going to really try and keep Mac Jones off the field, is their narrative. And then ultimately, when you put, you know, a young developmental guy who shows a lot of upside, and then ultimately it's like, okay, well, we got a veteran, we know what he is, and he's not as good as this younger guy. I think it's time to give the younger guy, you know, some play. And Peyton Manning said, you don't learn how to play quarterback by watching from the sideline. And I think there's this new wave. It disagrees with that because Aaron Rodgers, because Patrick Mahomes, because Jordan Love. I get that. I do think that ultimately, like, Elliott Wolf, who is not technically the GM yet in New England, but is probably going to be named the role, the official title soon. I think that's you take a guy at 3, you put him in the starting lineup, even if it's Drake May, even if he probably should develop for a year. You know, it might be safer to develop him for a year and off the bench. When you put Jacoby Brissett as that one obstacle between, you know, you and starting, I just can't see Drake May having an issue winning that quarterback competition. And maybe that's over-optimistic. I don't know.
I don't think it's over-optimistic. I think you make a great point where it's hard to let go of the old school mentality of, like, don't send this guy out here to get killed on a bad team as a rookie. And I think there's merit to that. But if the Patriots draft hits as well as they hope it does, you know, they've added talent at receiver. They added a talented young offensive lineman. If they feel good about the structure of their offense, then, like you said, the upside is just too tantalizing to ignore. And when you think about how much you can do with a quarterback on a rookie deal, I get it. If you just want to get that underway, I think I'm still trying to adjust my perception of the rest of this Patriots offense. Like, can Drake May step in and be a guy from day one the way we saw from C.J. Stroud last year? Which, it's already unfair to make that comparison, but I think people are going to.
Yeah, and I think the what they think in the building about their offense is that they're ready to compete. Elliot Wolf said it this offseason. He thinks that their offensive pieces are underrated. I don't think I agree. I don't think you agree. But it's important to know how they view themselves, because it's indicative of how they will proceed with their quarterback. If they think that they have the pieces in place to support a rookie quarterback, they're going to start their rookie quarterback, and they're not going to be worried about ruining him. Similarly, their whole draft plan was basically geared toward, let's support Drake. They picked receivers that are going to help them target the deep and intermediate places on the field. What's Drake May's strength? It's targeting the deep and intermediate spots on the field. So that's why they got Jalen Polk. That's why they got Javon Baker, because those guys are really nice complements to one another and to Drake May. The other picks that they took in the, I think, top four rounds is a guard and a guy they want to move from right to left tackle from Penn State. It's Caden Wallace. So this offense, I think, is still developing, but they're a bit bullish on their offense. At least that's what they say. And so I think they're ready to put Drake May into the offense. Like, I don't think they'll have reservations. Like, we think that they're going to get Drake May killed. I think they think that they're ready to get him into the lineup.
I honestly hope that they're right, because I want to watch Drake May. And I think Jalen Polk and Javon Baker are awesome. So I hope this goes according to plan for the Patriots. I just hope that they don't get Drake May killed. That's honestly a perfect segue for what we were originally going to talk about with you, Henry, which is the offensive and defensive rookie of the year conversation. And I think it's an interesting place to evaluate this post-draft, because we know the stats. Six quarterbacks drafted in the top 12. It's easy to think that this is going to be a year dominated by rookie quarterbacks. Then you do the math, you look at recent history, and you see only four out of the last 10 NFL offensive rookie of the year winners have played the quarterback position. Whether you want to talk about Ja'Marr Chase, whether you want to talk about Garrett Wilson, Saquon Barkley going back several years, it's very normal to see skill players win NFL offensive rookie of the year. So with Caleb Williams and Drake May and Jaden Daniels in this conversation, do you lean chalk, or do you think this could be a situation where we see this trend continue?
Okay, I feel like we don't, like, we've lost sight of the fact that we have supposedly, like, the best quarterback prospect in, like, a decade, right? Like, I don't know. Let's, like, I know the Bears have stunk for a long time, and I know they don't have a good history of picking quarterbacks, but Caleb Williams is, like, really, really, really good. He is a dual threat. He is so he's got the arm that everybody's been looking for a decade. And guess what? He's throwing Keenan Allen, Romeo Dunze, DJ Moore, Cole Kmet. He's got an offensive line in front of him. I think it's the boring answer. That's why I'm trying to get super excited about it. But I think he's the obvious pick here. Like, I don't want to overthink it. Like, I do think Marvin Harrison Jr. is another really good one. But guess what? That's also kind of chalk too. Because you put Marvin Harrison with Kyler Murray and in an offense that really kind of needs a receiver anyway. And it makes a lot of sense. But I think there's the obvious one. Like, because we have spent so much time trying to figure out who was going to go at number two. Is it Jaden Daniels or is it Drake May? And then will Drake May actually go at three? Like, the forgotten storyline was, like, Caleb Williams is really good. He's one of the best prospects we've seen in a long time. And that kind of guy tends to win Offensive Rookie of the Year. That's just, especially considering that his offense is like, they put a lot of money and a lot of draft picks into making that offense not stink anymore.
It is the boring answer, but you're not wrong for making the point. And the crazy thing, too, I'm not the first person to point this out, obviously, but the bar is so low for Bears quarterbacks, right? Like, we've heard so much, people have made so much about there's never been a 4,000 yard passer in franchise history. The rookie touchdown record for the Chicago Bears I think it's like 11. It's not, I mean, Caleb Williams could surpass all of these marks without trying all that hard. I mean, I hate to put too much expectation on the guy, but like, as long as he's healthy for 17 games, he could rewrite the Bears record books. And yeah, if he gets them into the playoff conversation, I honestly think it's a no-brainer. So I'm with you on that. You mentioned one Arizona Cardinal. Marvin Harrison Jr. is a great answer as well. Being the hipster that I am, if I'm looking for a long shot, I just want to throw out Trey Benson, the Cardinals' third-round running back pick. I think he's going to have plenty of opportunity. Obviously, James Conner is still in Arizona, but he's going to get plenty of opportunity. And speaking of James Conner, the dude scored 30 touchdowns since he joined Arizona, and that's with them being a bad team. So with Kyler Murray there, with Marv there now, with the offensive line souped up, I wouldn't be surprised if Trey Benson has a really, really good year. So if I'm looking for a bit of an upset, I feel pretty good about that.
I don't mind it. I certainly, in my dynasty fantasy leagues, have Trey Benson circled. I hope none of the people in my league are watching right now. but the other guy, I mean, we've already talked about him, Keon Coleman. Don't forget him. I think, like, again, long shot, no doubt. Like feels like a long shot. But you said, I think before air, or I'm not sure, but about 700, 800, like, useful yards for Keon Coleman. And I think that's, like, totally feasible. But what I think could also surprise us is, like, if Curtis Samuel doesn't quite work out as well as they need him to, and Khalil Shakir is a little more limited than we expected in that slot role, because guess what? Stephon Diggs and Gabe Davis are on the outside. All of a sudden, Keon Coleman becomes an extremely targeted offensive weapon in that offense that really needs a guy to do that. And, you know, Coleman is, like, almost perfectly suited to Josh Allen's strengths. He may not run super fast. He ran a 4.61. That's why he fell into the second round, but he's a big bodied guy. He can go up and catch the ball away from defensive backs. And most importantly, he knows how to be creative. Like, what Travis Kelce is for Patrick Mahomes, in the way that he can kind of, like, slide naturally toward Mahomes in sort of, like, after structure moments. That could be kind of an asset for Keon Coleman, where, like, the play breaks down, Josh Allen's scrambling, Keon Coleman's kind of, like, working his way back to Josh, and then they get some bonus yards. If that works out, then we also have, I think, Keon Coleman in Offensive Rookie of the Year contention.
Nope, not to pile too much expectation on the guy. Sorry, Keon, but I do think he's one of the biggest X factors in this coming NFL season, because if Keon Coleman is fine and he looks like a productive rookie, then I think the Bills are a good team, but probably not a true contender. But if Keon Coleman is Rookie of the Year caliber, then the Bills probably don't miss a beat. And if Josh Allen is playing the way he did in the second half of last season with a guy like Keon Coleman, then this is a team that I'm going to take just as seriously as I did when they were at the peak of their powers with Stephon Diggs doing his thing. So that performance could go a long way toward determining whether the Bills window is, or how open the Bills window is, I should say.
Yeah, I think the other thing we could see, a part of what empowered the Bills at the second half of last season was sort of, like, giving Stephon Diggs a bit of a backseat in the offense, like fewer snaps, fewer targets, fewer everything. And I think that's what empowered them to trade him away. Do I think it was a great decision? Like, not exactly, no, but that's why Joe Brady becomes such a huge part of this offense in a way that is even more crucial, is it's going to be more game plan oriented. Like, who do they see as a matchup threat in any given week? And it could be Coleman some weeks and it could be other guys other weeks. But like I said, if ultimately Curtis Samuel and Khalil Shakir don't end up being those matchup guys they can trust, then it might be Keon Coleman. So, yeah, I think the Bills are going to be okay, but it will mostly be because of Josh Allen.
Keon Coleman at plus 2,500, not bad looking odds though, or Trey Benson at plus 5,000 for that matter. But I think we already agreed at the top of this. It's boring for a reason, but I really do think it's Caleb Williams' award to lose. We'll see how that ages here over the next 10 months or so, give or take. Let's get to a way more interesting conversation, because I legitimately have no idea what to make of NFL Defensive Rookie of the Year. Because typically, I mean, you go back and look at the recent history of the award, pick a guy that was drafted in the top 10 or 12, and you're probably good to go. I mean, Will Anderson, top five pick. Sauce Gardner, top five pick. Chase Young, number two overall pick. Even Micah Parsons goes number 12 overall. Marshawn Lattimore, going back several years, is the number 11th overall pick. You just pick one of the first one or two guys drafted on defense, and you'll probably be right. But as we know, nobody got picked on defense, Henry, until pick number 15 with Leiatu Latu going to Indianapolis. So this really feels like much more of a grab bag when you're trying to figure out who your winner is. I lean toward, and look, this is easy, this is reductive, but Quinyon Mitchell out of Toledo was a guy that a lot of people saw going a lot higher. A lot of people saw him as a top 15, 16 pick. He goes 22 to the Eagles. I would be shocked if he's not a regular starter. He's playing on a defense that's revamped its pass rush with Bryce Huff joining the Eagles defensive front, not to mention Jalen Carter, all of the guys that the Eagles already have. If he just does his job and does it adequately and gets three or four picks on the season, I think this feels very, very logical to me. Again, it's kind of chalky, but the fact that Quinyon Mitchell fell as far as he did maybe makes it a little bit more surprising.
All right, guys, just leave that lower third Chiron right where it is, because that's exactly who my
thinking.
But my rationale is it's a little bit different. And my take is kind of like it's more of a bet in Howie Roseman than it is a bet in Quinyon Mitchell. I mean, I like Quinyon Mitchell as a prospect. I'm not trying to take anything away from him, but there is no general manager right now that I trust more like full-heartedly than Howie. Like, that guy right now reminds me of Bill Belichick in his like first and second run through three Super Bowls at a time. Just sort of like can't miss, Kobe taking threes. Like, it's just incredible the way that he manipulates salary cap space, draft position, and just finds ways to hit and gets players that are perfect fits for system need, etc. I mean, it's just kind of ridiculous. So I think I'm gonna just bet on Quinyon Mitchell, in part because I'm gonna bet on the Eagles general manager. I think he is in his bag, as they would say, and I'm gonna go ahead and just stick with that. Like, he's the new Belichick for me. I think why not just pick the guy that he's got.
Henry has a kid and now he's picking up like youthful slang. I love it. I love to see it. One thing that's worth throwing in as well. And like, this is, maybe it's not the way it should be, but let's be honest. Defensive Rookie of the Year is very often going to be on a team that competes for the playoffs. Not always, but I do think it helps to have the visibility of a team that's making a push for the playoffs, being part of those postseason conversations. And the Eagles are a team I'm very confident is going to be in that playoff mix. I think Terrion Arnold's probably worth mentioning too, because I do think the Lions will be solid. But Quinyon Mitchell feels like a very good bet for a favorite. All right, this might be a fool's errand, because history shows that, I mean, favorites win this award. Only a handful of non-first round picks, top 15 type guys, have won this award in recent memory. So we're stepping out on a limb trying to find a long shot for Defensive Rookie of the Year. Do you have one?
I don't think it's that long of a long shot. You're going to have to forgive me. I went with a number one overall pick for the last one, and now I'm sticking in the first round, but I'm trying to be sensible here, Dave. And I like Chop Robinson, who went to Miami. I got to stay in my division after all. Look, he's going into an edge spot that the Dolphins don't have their top end talent. Jalen Phillips is coming back from a season ending injury. Bradley Chubb coming back from a season ending injury. Those guys dealt with Achilles and ACL injuries. They're not really expected to be at 100% when the season starts. They may not even be at 100% when the season ends. You put in a guy like Chop Robinson to that defense, and I think you're going to see production. You're going to see snap counts. And then, like we said, we're going to see a playoff contender in Miami again this year. So I'm gonna go with him. I think, again, a guy that maybe he didn't see the production that you wanted to see out of a first-round pick in terms of sack totals at Penn State, but put him in this defense, play him a lot, let him rush, let him tee off on Drake May two times a year, and I think he'll hit the sack total that'll put him in contention for Defensive Player of the Year.
You know what's crazy about this award is I think Chop does qualify as a long shot. That's how chalk this award has been. I mean, Shaq Leonard won it in 2018 as a third round pick. But other than that, Chop Robinson at pick 21 overall would be the highest draft pick to since Shaq, but also in the last like 20 years before that. Other than Shaq Leonard, you have to go all the way back to D'Amico Ryans to find a guy who was drafted that late who won the award. And D'Amico coaches now, just in case anybody forgot. So yeah, big time picks have a bit of a habit of winning this award. I like it. This won't age well if I had to guess, but I love the pick of Cole Bishop in Buffalo. We'll just make it a Buffalo centric show. Cole Bishop out of Utah, the safety. I think it's a great blend of opportunity and scheme. Because Cole Bishop, if he handles his business, should be a starter from day one. Micah Hyde, Jordan Poyer, not in Buffalo anymore. If he looks like the guy that they drafted 60th overall, he should be a day one starter. There's veteran talent all over that Buffalo defense. And say what you will about Sean McDermott, maybe his motivational tactics are strange. Maybe he can frustrate fans from time to time. But he knows about coaching defense. He knows about coaching DBs. So this guy coming from a Utah program that also has a great track record with DBs, going to Sean McDermott and a Bills team that should be in the playoff race, I like that pairing a lot. And if he hits the ground running, is he going to be able to keep up with some of these first-round picks that are probably going to put up numbers? I don't know. But I like this. If somebody outside of the top 20 or so picks is going to do it, I like that pairing a lot with Cole Bishop.
They're obsessed with Cole Bishop. They really wanted him. They made sure to secure him in round two. The second that he got in there, they were talking about how they'd ID'd him early in the draft process. They think he's as versatile as of a safety as Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde. They're just obsessed. Brandon Bean gets very fixated on draft prospects. It's kind of his way of doing it. You know, analytics people say, don't fall in love with the guy, right? Like try and fall in love with sort of like the class and find your tiers and don't totally get fixated on the guy. Brandon Bean says, screw that. And I'm going to find my guys and then I'm going to move around the draft board to go get them. And he's been pretty good about finding guys that fit and will succeed. They seem to feel like this Cole Bishop pick is a lot like their Dalton Kincaid pick. They just so happen to also be Utah guys. And I think that they just saw like the perfect fit for their defense. They had a need in that spot. I think you're right. You're kind of onto something here. Cole Bishop could be a really special player in year one.
Cole Bishop is plus 13,000 to win NFL Defensive Rookie of the Year. I mean, what do you have to lose? I'm just saying. I mean, look, don't take advice from me.
But, whatever you put down.
Well, yeah. Okay, that's well said, Henry. Let's not be too irresponsible. But I like those odds as a Cole Bishop fan. I'm just saying. Henry, always something in the AFC East, man. I'm glad you're back. Can't wait to get back together with you as we get ready for the season, preview how this whole thing is going to shake out. But I appreciate the time as always.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Good to see you.
Thanks again to Henry for stopping by to help me with some rookie predictions. And you know what? I was just in a predicting kind of mood at the start of this week. And depending on how this goes, I'm either going to mute the comments and hide the video or I'm going to bring this up every 3 weeks for the rest of my life because today it is, I'm looking, it's May 6th. So you're listening to this on May 7th. I'm going to do my best to predict the 2024-2025 NFL playoffs for the upcoming season. Schedule's not even out. Don't care. We're going to early predict the playoffs culminating in Super Bowl 59 in New Orleans, which you can watch right here on Fox next year. We're already counting down Super Bowl on Fox. Super Bowl 59. Let's get to it. Like I said, what's the worst that could happen? It could only haunt me for the rest of my days if I do a terrible job with this. But we're going to break down the playoff field, a way too early look now that the draft is over. Can I get the graphic on the screen? Can I get my teams? We're going to start in the AFC. Make it real easy for you. My division winners, my division champions, number one seed. I don't think the Chiefs are going to experience a drop-off again. I got them winning the AFC West and the bye week. I think this has the potential to be a better team than the one that just won the Super Bowl. Even with some questions, we can get to it. Number two, I buy the Houston Texans. I think they are for real. The addition of Stephon Diggs, not to mention some much-needed reinforcements on defense. CJ Stroud buying all the stock I can. I got the Texans winning the South as the two. As the three seed, maybe my first upset. Yes, it is the Cincinnati Bengals winning their division once again. A healthy Joe Burrow makes the difference. I low-key love what they did on defense. I think the Bengals are going to be back with a vengeance in 2024. Maybe this is a surprise. I don't think so. At the four seed, I've got the Bills maintaining their stranglehold on the division. I ain't just giving it up easy. Like, the Bills have been running this thing too long for me to just think somebody else is going to snatch it from them. You got to prove it to me. Jets, Dolphins, Patriots. My wild card, Ravens fans, don't be mad at me. I've got serious questions about your offensive line. And you lost Mike McDonald to the Seattle Seahawks. I think losing the D coordinator could be a big deal. I got the Ravens as my first wild card. I do have Aaron Rodgers leading the Jets to the playoffs if he can just stay healthy. Supposedly, he's full go for OTAs. That seems like it bodes well for the season. I'm going to take a chance on the old guy. Taking a bit of a flyer with the Indianapolis Colts as my seven seed. That's right. I've got the AFC South sending two teams to the playoffs. And this is just a vote of confidence in what we saw from Anthony Richardson. They were just flashes, but they were so impressive. If he can stay healthy, I think the Colts have a great shot. They nearly made the playoffs with Gardner Minshew. If Richardson is available and showing the flashes consistently, I think this could be a playoff team. They brought back all of their key players. Michael Pittman Jr., DeForest Buckner is back. Kenny Moore is still there. Adding Adonai Mitchell to the offense. I like this team a lot if Anthony Richardson is healthy. I think he will be, and I think the Colts could be a surprise playoff team as a result. Flipping over to the NFC, I had a hard time not going chalk. Like, you always hear the stories that half the playoff field turns over every year. You can count on two or three teams to make it that didn't make it the year before. It's hard to find those teams in the NFC. You'll see what I mean. In the top seed, the Philadelphia Eagles. I don't think their collapse last year was football related. I think it was vibes related, but the vibes are sky high in Philly with the additions that they've made, the free agents they've brought in. They've got two much better coordinators than the guys they had last year, Kellen Moore and Vic Fangio. This is one of the best rosters in the league. They were 11-1 before it all went to hell last year. I think they'll pick up where they left off when they were a good football team. I don't even feel that bad about that prediction. We'll see. Number two, I don't think it's going to be a huge drop off for the San Francisco 49ers, but this is a very veteran team. I think you always have to worry about injury with guys like this. I know that's not fun to say, but it's something that's on my radar. How does the wide receiver room gel with rookie Ricky Pearsall and the rumors about Brandon Ayuk and Debo Samuel being potential trade candidates? Dre Greenlaw is coming back from the Achilles injury in the Super Bowl. There's just enough questions here to make me wonder, but I still think the Niners are going to be one of the best teams in the NFL. At number three, the Detroit Lions. I like them to pick up exactly where they left off. Do you see what I'm saying? Doesn't this playoff field start to look very, very familiar? Lions doing their thing at the three seed. I think we all agree. We would guess the NFC South is going to be the four seed. I picked the Atlanta Falcons. I'll be honest. I wanted to pick the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I love what Tampa's done this year. But again, from year to year, you see so much turnover. I think somebody new does have to make it. I think it'll be the Atlanta Falcons this year with Kirk Cousins. My wild cards, again, starting to look awfully familiar. The Green Bay Packers, once again, a wild card, but a very good wild card. I think the Packers are an 11 or 12 win team, but somebody has to be the runner up in that division. A very similar story for the Dallas Cowboys. They won the division. They were the 2 seed last year. With what they've done or not done in 2024, I think they take a slight step back. I think this team is still good enough to win 9, 10, maybe 11 games. But with the way Philly looks, that still lands them as a wild card. And then at 7, my upset pick, I guess. Like I said, I'm trying to find new teams to make the playoffs in the NFC. And I'm going to roll with the guy Henry McKenna and I said would win NFL Offensive Rookie of the Year, Caleb Williams. The bar is low in Chicago, and if he jumps above it, I could absolutely see the Bears being a 9, maybe 10-win playoff team. Don't forget how good the defense was after they traded for Montez Sweat. They held on to Jalen Johnson. We've talked enough about the offense. We know what it could be capable of. I absolutely think the Chicago Bears are a team you have to take seriously as a playoff team. And then we jump to the Super Bowl, as we said, on Fox. In New Orleans, Super Bowl 59, cannot wait. First Super Bowl in my hometown since, I believe, the 2012 season. It's been a minute, and when we get there, oh man, could it be fun. Because I've got the Kansas City Chiefs going for the three-peat against Jordan Love's Green Bay Packers, a rematch of Super Bowl I. I think people predicted this for years when Aaron Rodgers was the quarterback in Green Bay. It would be ironic if it happened with Jordan Love under center. But man, what a bonanza this would be. Two legacy franchises, the Chiefs going for the three-peat, and I'm going to give it to them. I'm at the point where I'm tired of betting against the Kansas City Chiefs. And like I said, they got a question to answer at left tackle. They did lose L'Jarius Sneed, but I think this team could be even better than the one that just beat the 49ers. So, yes, I'm going to roll with Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs in an unprecedented NFL three-peat. If this ages poorly, don't at me, because I'll mute it. I don't want to hear it. But if it ages well, then I will be tweeting it or posting it into your social media feeds for the rest of my life. This has been my way too early predictions. Thank you for your time. Put a pin in that until we'll say November, when we really have a gauge on how smart or dumb all of that looks. That does it for the show. We'll be back in your feeds so soon. Plenty to get to as we continue to move through the NFL offseason. I do appreciate it. Make sure you're subscribed on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts. If you're not, go find us on YouTube at NFL on Fox. I already dropped the social handle at NFL on Fox Pod. Wherever you prefer to do your social, you can find us there. We appreciate it so much, y'all. I know I always say that, but it's been fun growing the audience here, developing along with y'all. I appreciate your time, and we will talk to y'all so soon. I'll catch y'all next time.